So good morning. Welcome to Prairie UU Society. My name is Barbara Park and I'm the current president. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter your age, your abilities, or inabilities. On Sunday morning, we provide a wide variety of services. They're presented either by a Prairie member of the wider community, or our minister, Reverend Jane Espenson. Today, Susan Elias will be our presenter, and I'll introduce her more later. Now, I'd like to introduce our speaker for today. Susan Elias is a neighbor of ours because she teaches at the Madison Central Montessori School, which most of you, if you come in from Verona Road, will pass on the way here. Last summer, she spent 2 weeks in Palestine and Israel as part of the Interfaith Peace Builders. She's originally from Milwaukee and graduated from UWM with a degree in speech pathology and audiology. And we welcome her, and I think this should be a very interesting program.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here. As was mentioned, I do know the Prairie here because we walk from our school and take the children over to Marlboro Park, and they always admire the beautiful plantings. We love going by and seeing the Prairie, and then they'll look down the long walkway to the door and see the flowers hanging over, and it's very nice for the neighborhood. So thank you for inviting me today. About 20 years ago, my church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, started initiatives to advocate for peace and justice in the Middle East in response to requests from Palestinian Christians who were living under difficult conditions due to the occupation. I began supporting action by Churches for Middle East Peace, which is a Washington, D.C. group of which the Unitarian Universalists are members. After 9/11, I began to try in earnest to understand the history and the politics behind the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Last summer, I decided to see for myself the situation in Palestine by joining a delegation of 20 people through Interfaith Peace Builders. We spent 2 weeks listening to many people representing groups of Palestinian and Israeli people working to end the occupation through peaceful popular resistance. We also listened to UN workers, students from Hebrew University in Israel, and Berzit University in the West Bank, a representative from a settlement and one from a Palestinian refugee camp. We stayed in homes of Christian and Muslim Palestinians and Israeli Jews. This delegation focused on youth and children. I compiled my pictures, notes, and literature and created the PowerPoint you are about to see. My presentation is abbreviated today to meet your time schedule, but I will hopefully give you information and pictures enough to ponder afterwards. How many people here have ever traveled to Israel or Palestine? Did you take an Israeli tour?
I took an Israeli tour with my grandfather who had worked in the Middle East.
Okay.
Palestinians.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, most of the time if you travel to, you know, a traditional church tour or the usual way that Americans go over, you go through, you go through Israel and have an Israeli bus tour to the holy sites. And basically what that means is that Israelis are not allowed into the Palestinian territories, which is ridiculous to say since there's settlements all over there, but you're not allowed without a permit. So when you're on an Israeli tour, you're not really shown what they don't want you to see inside the occupied territories. So we went all over Israel. We went as far south as Gaza, and then we went into many areas, but we spent most of our time in the West Bank. First, I will give you a brief introduction to the occupation and the problems involved. Then we'll look at the many people who work toward peaceful solutions in spite of the governments worldwide that perpetuate the cycle of violence. And finally, we will see those most at risk, the children.
ومشينا سوا بدرب النضال ضحينا سوا بالدم الغالي ضوينا العتم بنور العيون.
Now the series of maps here help to explain the physical presence of the reverse of Palestine and Israel through the years. Before the UN made the plan in 47, only 2% of the land was owned by the Jewish population, which is shown on the map on the left in the white areas, little speckling around there. And then after World War II, when the Holocaust, reaction to the Holocaust and from Zionist Jewish population in Europe who wanted to settle in the Holy Land, as it's usually referred to, the UN agreed, and the UN was basically made up of the US, France, and Great Britain. The UN agreed to divide up the Palestinian land into the areas that you see there. The point on the left along the Mediterranean Sea and map, the second from the left, is Gaza Strip. And then the West Bank is the large area on toward the right, and up toward the top is Lebanon and the area of the Golan Heights. So then, of course, the Palestinians, the Christian and Muslim Palestinians who owned most of the land, were expelled, and they had to go somewhere. So 800,000 Palestinians were expelled from their homes and land during that time, when the Jewish people from Europe and the U.S. started moving in. Where did the 800,000 Palestinians go? They went to refugee camps set up by the UN in Lebanon, the Gaza Strip, and areas within the Palestinian territory called the West Bank. Then, of course, the Palestinians rejected that plan. They didn't have anything to do with what was going on in Europe at the time, the Holocaust or anything like that. So they started to fight back, and that didn't sit very well. They were overwhelmed, of course, by the strength that was provided to the new Jewish settlers. So in 1949, the Israeli government decided to occupy and take control of all the Palestinian territories and shrunk it down. As you can see, the Gaza Strip got much smaller, as did the West Bank. And the north disappeared entirely. And then there were various uprisings, intifadas, and things throughout 49 to 67. And then the breakup of the West Bank started early on with settlers, the government actually sponsoring housing within the Palestinian territories, even though the United Nations had declared that that would not be available to them. As of 2010, you see what is left of the Palestinian land, not much. Now, of course, one of the major problems is the transfer and displacement of Palestinians. This is a settlement. For those of you who have never been to the area, we don't really see pictures of settlements in the U.S., and everyone has ideas that they're small. They're not small, they're huge. This is a rural settlement. It has expanded down below, even bigger in size. the settlements are cities. They have malls and schools and libraries, pools, parks, and everything else. They have roads, extensive road systems to go to and from the settlements. Now, you have to remember, these are all within the Palestinian territories. The government builds some, and then also people, settlers, will decide to claim a piece of land, and usually the government will go along with it then and develop that piece of land. Israel has been paying Jewish citizens and businesses to move onto Palestinian land, offering tax breaks and financial packages. U.S. tax dollars, of course, help, as we contribute $15 million a day to Israel in foreign aid. Israel is the only recipient of U.S. foreign aid that does not have to report what it's going for. President Obama recently just signed a $5.6 billion package to Israel, which includes $3.1 billion in military aid. This is a settlement encroaching onto a Palestinian town. This is another settlement. The Palestinian town used to be down below. You can see that there's nothing left of it. When a settlement goes up, people are evicted from their homes and they're demolished, or they're just forced out and the housing is taken over. This is an outpost. You may hear that term sometimes. That is a group of people who decide, the Jewish people, usually Orthodox, they have reasons for choosing the areas they choose. For the government, it's usually aquifers. Water is very scarce. It's a desert. So the government may put up settlements over aquifers, around aquifers, so that they can then secure the water rights by fencing and roads. Usually the Orthodox Jewish people have different reasons, various holy places. According to the Hebrew scriptures, something or another happened in a spot, and they'll want to build there. This is an urban settlement. This is in the old city of Jerusalem in the Muslim section, and you can see a menorah up on the building in the back, and that is now a Jewish settlement. This is in the Christian section. You can tell the Israeli flag hanging out of the window, so they're usually marked. Wherever there's a settlement, it's never a benign occurrence. The settlers are moving into hostile territory. They're not wanted. The land, they have no rights to the land. They will dispute that, of course, but the UN says they don't. And so they are armed. They are often dangerous. They will persecute and harm the Palestinians until they leave. Sometimes the Palestinians are offered huge financial packages from independent people to buy their housing, and that does occur sometimes. A lot of it is funded by the Jewish community in the States. This appears to be an old Jewish temple from the past at some point. It's in the city of Hebron. And Hebron was designated within the West Bank territories. Now, Hebron is important to religious Orthodox Jews because it was the old city of David. And so Hebron had been fought over for many years. There's lots of settlers there, lots of military. And you can see the flags hanging outside of the window. This was a representative we spoke with at that settlement in Hebron. This is a picture of a kibbutz. The kibbutz, kibbutzins were built in 48 and 49 when the a large immigration occurred from the United States and Europe of the Jews who came in to settle the new land of Israel. And they wanted to live together, so it's a commune. This is a beautiful place. It's on the Mediterranean. It's only a very short distance from the Gaza Strip. But of course, they had to displace the original people. Palestinians lived all along the Mediterranean, and the architecture in this building, you can see by the arches that it was once a Muslim Arab family who lived there. is another kind of displacement. This is in West Jerusalem. It's the oldest Muslim cemetery in the city. Many of the graves have been dug up so that the Israeli government will actually, it's a private organization. It's funded by the Weizmann Foundation in the US. They are building a museum of tolerance, ironically, over the Muslim graves. Here's another area. This is in Jaffa, Tel Aviv, and that was a thriving Palestinian port city for a century. And that ended up in the land designated to be Israel, so the Palestinians had to leave. And this was a mosque, which is now called, rather insensitively, I think, Aladdin's Restaurant. This is another, you can see the flags. This is an addition to a house in the East Jerusalem neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah. Sheikh Jarrah and Silwan are often in the news because there's extreme resistance to having their houses, Palestinian houses, demolished. There is a plan that the Israeli government has for making a thoroughfare from West Jerusalem all the way over to the Jordan River, which cuts right through East Jerusalem, which the UN declared would be part of Arab, the Palestinian Arab territories, Arab East Jerusalem. This family put on in this little addition without a permit. You can't build if you're a Palestinian without a permit, but Palestinians don't get permits. So sometimes they build anyway. Their family had outgrown this. And the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, one day came and evicted them, saying they did not have a permit, they had to leave, and now that family is homeless. This is a picture of, I want to go back for a moment and just talk about home demolitions. Home demolitions is a huge security issue for the Palestinians. They don't give notice. They don't get much notice, like 24 hours. And so they live in constant fear. They're actually terrorized by the fact of maybe ending up homeless and having nowhere to go. There have been over 18,000 homes demolished of Palestinian ownership since 1967. So it is quite a frustrating, very terrifying things for the Palestinians to be living under all the time. Where do they go when their homes get demolished? If they can't find relatives to move in with, they have to go to refugee camps. This is the largest refugee camp in the West Bank. It's called Balata Refugee Camp outside in the town of Nablus. And this is a member of our group walking through a street in the refugee camp. Balata is home to over 30,000 people, and they live on 1/2 square mile, which is about the size of Lake Wingra. You all probably know Lake Wingra if you can figure 30,000 people living there. This was put up by the UN in 1948, and in 1950 the people were still living there, and they were in tents yet. So they appealed to the UN to build permanent structures, so they're actually cement on the footprint of these tents. And then they kept needing more space, so now they go up 3 stories and they can't go up any further. This is another street in Balata. This is the clinic in Balata. It serves 500 people a day. This is the playground. That's our group, and I'm standing at the far end of it. There's a young man in a pink shirt on the left. He came out to see what was going on. This is a, used to be a bustling city, Hebron, and now it's like a ghost town because of all the settlements there. These were all shops, Palestinian shops, along the bottom, and then people lived on the top, but they all had to leave. It's a lot of graffiti. Some of it is, it's very captivating. Some of it is really nice, like this one. Bullet holes. Our guide showed us where he lives, his apartment. He was a student and they were under curfew and he had his light on to study, so they shot, the IDF shot up at his window. Hebron used to be famous for soap. It was all the people from the area would buy soap from Hebron. There were five factories. So when the Israeli bombed out Hebron, they wiped out all of the soap factories. So a lot of the infrastructure of the West Bank is destroyed, businesses, water. This is a school in Hebron. They have no money. They have no building materials. They cannot repair anything. Okay, so another huge problem is the barriers. Palestinians are not allowed to leave the West Bank, or Gaza, of course, without permits. They can't go from one area of the city to the other without permits, and this keeps them from everything. It keeps them from visiting their families, get medical care, go to their places of education, work, go to their fields. This is the big wall. Some people call it a security fence. Some people call it an apartheid wall. Snakes all through. It was going to be built supposedly on the 1967 Green Line, but it goes way in. It snakes around to protect settlements and also to get aquifers and agricultural land. This is what it looks like in Bethlehem. Now, most tourists would not take you probably down this street. It's, you know, pretty trashy. And it's really tall and really big and awful. Bethlehem is encircled. It's cut off from Jerusalem, which makes it very hard for people to get to their holy places and to get to Jerusalem for celebration, which, of course, the Palestinians, no matter what religion, consider their capital. This is all over the country. There you can see the road down on the right. There's razor wire, barbed wire fences. And here's an example of the problem that it causes. There's agricultural fields back there. These two people have to take their animals with water jugs because they have been cut off from their water sources and have to go many miles to get water. This is a type of a roadblock. This is a Palestinian road. They're segregated roads. They're segregated license plates. Israeli license plates are one color. Palestinians are another, so that people at the roadblocks can tell the difference. The roads that Israelis travel on are not open to Palestinians. This is a typical Palestinian road. And that's an earth mound there. The settlers want that hilltop where that white structure is. So they've made it very difficult. That's a Palestinian Christian family who lives up there. And he's a peaceful protester. His family has owned it for many years. He said, we're not leaving, but they make life very difficult for him. This is a roadblock, a checkpoint going out of Bethlehem, and we waited for an hour for that gate to go up. You never know. It's random. There's no opening times. This is Hebron. You can see all this is a guard station and walls and fences, and they keep the people from accessing one neighborhood to another. All those wires up on top are surveillance cameras, and there's a big concrete piece that was put in to keep people from going down that street. this is a checkpoint. This soldier is looking in trunks of cars and checking permits. Our group had to get off the bus and show our passports. This is the ultimate checkpoint. Welcome to Erez Crossing. Now, this is really ironic. It's written in Hebrew above and Arabic below, and then English. Now, Erez is the entrance to the Gaza Strip, but it's not very welcoming since no one can get in or out of Gaza. There it is. It's very eerie. There's no one. It's silent. That security officer was filming us, and we were taking his picture. But back way back behind that big wall back there, behind many layers of security fence, is 1.5 million people who are virtually in an open-air prison, 40% of them under the age of 18. They cannot get out. Their airspace is closed. Their fishing rights are, 1 mile. They can't go out by sea, land, or air. So they are virtually in prison. Why? Because they voted for the wrong person during a Democratic election.
Fired up, ain't gonna take it no more. Tied up, ain't gonna take it no more. You say cool down, we say step down. You're breaking my mother's heart. Fired up, ain't gonna take it no more. Tied up, ain't gonna take it no more. You say cool down, we say step down. You're breaking my mother's heart. Shame, shame. Children need schools more than they need jails. And that's where our society fails. First 7 years creates a child's foundation. Mandatory for a healthy nation. And we're fired up, ain't gonna take it no more. We're tired up, ain't gonna take it no more. You say cool down, we say step down. You're breaking my mother's heart. Shame.
Now I'm going to show you pictures of the people, some of the people that we met. These are the ones you never hear about here from the media because they're not killing each other. You don't see them, you don't hear about them. And it's so important to give support to these nonviolent resistors, just like here on our mini scale in Madison. These are community organizers, and they put their lives on the line every day. For years, they have been working and developing different groups to resist the occupation. This is generations of family of people who were ejected from the house in Sheikh Jarrah. And because they put that little addition on, they now live homeless out in front of the house under a tent. And they hold signs up saying, we won't leave. We have a right to live here. They work with the Civic Coalition for Defending Palestinian Rights in Jerusalem. And the women say, at first we were afraid and we're not afraid anymore. And that would be of the police coming in and, the middle of the night and evicting them and threatening them. So the police come and they take down the IDF. They'll come and take down their tent because they don't have a permit for it. And they just put it back up again. So they are very strong women doing their resistance. This is a man in an area called Bilin. He's been organizing peaceful protests for 5 years to try to get the government to move the wall, the fence all around Bilin, because the farmers, it's an agricultural area, and the farmers cannot get to their land. This was one of the leaders of the peaceful resistance. They always get tear gas when the IDF gets tired of doing crowd control during these protests. They just shoot tear gas, and he was hit in the heart with a tear gas canister and died. So it is very dangerous work when you're trying to stand up against such a strong military government like Israel has. This is a protest every Friday afternoon, an Israeli group called Women in Black. This is West Jerusalem. We joined their protest one Friday, and they stand on this very busy intersection and hold these signs up in Israel, in West Jerusalem. And there were some people from the synagogue across the street who came with an Israeli flag when we were there and held it up in front of the protesters, and the police made them walk away with it and go to the other side of the street. These are four men from who are actually legislators in Jerusalem. But Jerusalem, according to the UN, is supposed to be a shared city. So Palestinian legislators do sit on the city council of Jerusalem. But these people had their Jerusalem residency revoked because they were not seen as being loyal to the aims of Israel. Then they wouldn't leave. They said, we're not leaving our home. So they were put in jail. And then when they got out, they sought refuge at the Red Cross, which is where they're staying until their trial is finished. And we met with them in the Red Cross. So that is another stance. They will not leave their home in Jerusalem, and they have to live in the Red Cross for now. This is a man who owns the place up on the hill. His family, Daoud Nasser, his family has owned Dar's Vineyard since 1913. And he's a great guy. He gets children from down in the village every summer to a peace camp. And they make wonderful art and signs of peace. And he said, we're not leaving. So he just goes underground. You know, I used to laugh when we heard about bin Laden going into caves to live, and everybody thought he was chased into the desert and living like an animal. Oh, no, no, no. He has caves. Caves are great. I mean, you can live in caves very well. It's cool in the summer, and he has them all painted because from air surveillance, they will rip down his structures. He is not allowed, because he can't get permits. So he's not allowed to build anything, and he has his farm. Settlers have uprooted and burned 200 of his olive trees. But, you know, he just keeps there. He says, I'm not leaving. I loved the reading earlier from Micah, because this is a piece of art that the children at the kibbutzim that I showed you earlier, it's actually run by peace advocate, Israeli peace advocates, and they had children make this. These are spent rockets, the parts that are up on top, because they live very close to Gaza. And Hamas would lob those handmade rockets over. So the kids went and got these spent rockets. And then they put together this sculpture. And it's based on that reading from the Bible about turning the spears into pruning hooks. And it's beautiful. This is another Israeli who helped us understand the road system and the segregation and how it divides up the land and takes away more and more land from the Palestinian. He works with the Israeli group, Israelis Against Home Demolitions. That was our guide in Hebron who had his house shot up, and he gives tours. You know, these are, you can always go there. There's a whole group called Alternative Tourism, and you can get a real tour of Palestine and Israel. This is a man who works for the United Nations. He's an Australian lawyer. He works for an NGO called Defense for Children International, and he works on child detention cases. Palestinian children are considered adults to be tried in adult court at the age of 16. Israeli children are considered adults at the age of 18. Also, Palestinians are tried in military court. Israelis are tried in civil court. So there's currently 10,000 Palestinian political prisoners. 423 are children. He works with the family and tries to get, the kids will get, you know, they'll throw stones at the soldiers and get arrested, and they can be kept as long, Palestinians can be kept in without charges and for as long as deemed necessary by the government. This is someone from our group, but this was in the Balata refugee camp, and the man on the left works with children. You can see the poster on the right, Refugee Youth Magazine. This is Omar Bugatti on the right. He leads a big BDS campaign. We met with him at the Quakers, the Friends Committee organization in Ramallah. And BDS is boycott, divestment, and sanction. And if anybody is interested in that, that's something you can easily do here in the States with your investments. If you're interested in anything like that, you can go to whobenefits.org. It's a list of all the companies, like Caterpillar, for example, who has a contract with Israel to use their machines for home demolitions. They're all Caterpillars or Volvos. So you can ask your investment counselor to pull you out of those funds. This is a wonderful woman, Noma Kazion. Noma Kazion lives in the town of Srot, which is about a half a mile from the Gaza Strip. And they were often the recipients of those handmade rockets. And then the Israeli government had that huge offensive in Gaza, December of 08, January of 09, where they killed something like 1,200 Palestinians. They just bombed all the infrastructure, the water, the sewer, everything. And she was sickened by it. She had friends in Gaza. She said, we went to shop. Gaza Strip is a metropolitan. Gaza City is metropolitan. There's five universities in Gaza. You have to remember the Palestinian society is not an totally agricultural rural society. They're very well educated. They're big cities. And she said they always went shopping in Gaza City. And she had many friends there. So she started a group called Other Voice, and she knew that in December of 08 that her country had broken all moral codes. And her motto for her group and others is, not in my name, not for my security. And she works over the internet to try to help people in Gaza and also to get other Israelis to understand that this has to stop. This was a video conference we had with the people on the right. They're just coming in. It's a split screen. I'm on the left taking my own picture there. And the woman on the right was entering with some other people from Gaza. And that was in Ramallah at the Friends Committee office. And they partner with the Friends, the Quakers in Ramallah, and work on children's programming to help the children in Gaza. And they can't get out, so they do it by video conference. And it was so interesting because they had young counselors there, college age, and we got to do a Q&A. We always had Q&A after our listening sessions. And someone asked a young woman about Hamas and if they were being bullied and taken over and made into more of a clerical society. And she said, well, she said, you know, my friends and I were out one day and it was hot and we took off our scarves and someone came up to us and said, you women should wear your scarves. And she said, we told them, you can't tell us what to do. We'll wear our scarves when we want to. The women are very strong in Palestine. And she said, but understand this, our problem is not Hamas. Our problem is the occupation. Without the occupation, there wouldn't have to be a Hamas. So she was very clear on that. And every group we spoke to said, please tell the people in the United States that Palestinians are not terrorists. We want peace just like everybody else. So it was actually a very heartbreaking thing to have to listen to because, you know, they're in prison. They're not. One young man said he hadn't been able to leave Gaza in 4 years. I'm going to run just quickly through this section. It's various pictures of Israeli and Palestinian youth. Of course, the oldest people and the youngest people are those most at risk in any kind of situation where there is violence and war. This is the third generation, this little boy born in the Balata refugee camp. Currently, the Palestinians are the largest refugee population in the world and the oldest. It's 60 years of being refugees. The right of return is a huge final outcome issue in this conflict. This is the young lady from the family in Sheikh Jarrah who is homeless and sits outside the house. And she says, it's really hard going to high school and having to do your homework and use other people's bathrooms. But she said, we will never leave. These are students in the Kibbutz Akim, where they had the wonderful sculpture that was made. And sadly, someone had asked them, they were graduating, you know, and they must go into the service. Girls serve 2 years and boys 3, mandatory military service. And sadly, they didn't know what the green line was. Someone asked them about their geography books and how Israel is portrayed. And they did not understand the question. They had to speak to in Hebrew to the man there who is from the U.S. and has lived on a kibbutz for many years. But they are kept in ignorance. Israel does not teach their youth about the Palestinians, no history about the Palestinians narrative, and that is a big problem there, that each side has their own historical narrative and does not teach each other, teach their children the other side. People, children watching others in the Balata summer program refugee camp. These are wonderful college counselors. Some are Israeli, some are Palestinians, and they're working in Arab East Jerusalem in the Silwan neighborhood, counseling young people. Little boy holding a spent tear gas canister. This was an interesting shot out the bus window. This was in West Jerusalem, which is Israel. And there is a man on the left holding a rifle of some sort. He is their guard. Now, if you have, apparently Israelis, if there's 10 or more in a group, you have to have an armed guard with you, which is absurd if you're in Israel, really, nowadays. And you can see that the government has to keep their people in fear. Otherwise, the people would not support the military regime like they do. They have to constantly keep this existential threat over their heads. Little boys in Hebron, kids are kids. Wonderful counselor at the Balata camp, talking to us. They use the arts a lot with young people to try to get them as a way to express their fears and anxiety and the war-torn terror in which they live every day. These are kids doing a Palestinian folk dance. Garbage is a huge problem. This is a roadside stand in Ramallah. The Palestinians have to pay municipal taxes, but their garbage really is not picked up. They don't have a lot of water. They don't have electricity. There's blackouts and brownouts and no water, but they have to pay their taxes just like Israelis do. Yeah, the Palestinians have the internet. These are Israeli soldiers. They are at risk. There is a large amount of them who commit suicide while they're in the service. The society does not support resistance from going into the armed forces. You can do it, but there is a big price to pay if you are a young person and you don't want to serve.
This is Israel.
Israel, yeah, the Israeli army where mandatory service is required. I like this picture. I found that probably, I don't know, maybe it's just the Eastern culture, but it's also the Palestinian families are very close-knit. And here's just three things to ponder.
Peace, shalom.
Everybody knows that song, right? So that is a very quick overview of my presentation.
Thank you so much.